Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Ashes to Ashes, where we'll be talking all things cricket between England and Australia ahead of the second test match, which begins on Saturday. On today's programme, all the gossip from both camps leading up to the first day-night game, a look back at all the events that have folded in Brisbane after England suffered a heavy defeat at the hands of the enemy. We'll also look ahead to the next test in Adelaide and discuss England's chances in what could be the most pivotal point in the series. Who should be in, who should be out, we'll include our picks for the weekend and also give our predictions for the series. Will the Aussies kick on from their victory, or can England pull things around? You're listening to Burst. Hello and welcome to the second episode of Ashes to Ashes. Today we're joined in the studio by the very familiar James Furnish. Good to see you, James.
Thanks, mate.
We also have our 12th man in the production studio, Will Trimble. Good to see you, Will. And we have two extra special guests today. We have David Bromley.
Hi, Tim.
Hello, how are you, Dave?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Very well, very well. Just give us a backdrop, Dave, about who you've played cricket for and what you do.
Well, I'm predominantly a batsman wicketkeeper. I play for a club called The Vizes in Wiltshire, and I also play for Bournemouth University Cricket Club.
Haven't you played a bit of County Twos, Dave?
Yeah. Little bit of County Twos this year.
You didn't want to show off.
I've barely mentioned it in the last few months.
County Twos as well. So that's Dave. He's a batsman and an England fan, Dave. That's the
absolutely
the
yes.
A big England fan. And we also have Craig Short in the studio. Good to see you, Craig.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
Give us a bit of a backdrop, Craig, about what you do.
So I call myself a wicketkeeper batsman. I also play for Bournemouth University and Bansted back in Surrey. And I'm an avid Australian fan.
Yes, we have a bit of a rivalry here in the studio. We have
you can
Australian
hear it in
fan.
His accent. Yes.
Why is it you're an Australian fan, Craig?
Just to both my parents were born there, and cool. I've lived out there for a bit. So
yeah, you're an Aussie fan. Yeah. So that's going to be good for the show today to have a bit of diversity. To kick off the show today, we're going to do a quiz called Timmy Teasers. For those that don't know who Timmy Teasers is, it's going to be a series.
No.
Well, you're going to find out. It's a series of questions. About some of the terms we find in cricket and actually where those terms have come from, because we're all sort of familiar in the studio of some of these terms, but we don't actually know where they are from. So before the show, I asked the guys five terms, and they've had a little time to think about it. So we're going to run over those terms and see some of the theories that they have. So the first term that we have is googly. Would anybody like to hazard a guess? A googly, by the way, is a spinning delivery that a leg spinner bowls, and it turns the other way to deceive the batsman. So does anybody know where the term googly came from and what it means?
Anyone? No? Anyone want to go? I haven't got a clue, if anyone wants to jump in.
The only thing I can hazard a guess at is when the ball turns the other way, it leaves the batsman a little bit googly-eyed.
You looked that up, surely.
Oh, absolutely
right.
Not.
Is that right?
No, that is correct, David Bromley. Very good. Very
one
good.
One from
effort.
One.
That's number one for the English fan in the studio.
Unbelievable.
One nil. Great effort, one nil. Dave. So that's 1-0. Yeah, absolutely correct. Yeah. Also called a wrong-in. It's used as the batsman eyes goggle when the ball comes down.
Wow.
Great effort, Dave. Mm. So that's 1-0.
I've been goggled a few times in my career.
I've seen it for my first hand, Dave. The second one was popping crease. Popping crease. What do we think about that? Where's the term popping crease come from?
My guess would be it's sort of popping crease is at the end of the pitch, sort of where the pitch isn't cut. So the popping crease. I'm thinking maybe if the ball pitches there, it pops a little bit more. That would be my guess.
Okay. Any advances on that?
I've got absolutely no idea.
I like that guess though.
Mm. Yeah, a decent guess. So yeah, popping crease is where the batsman sort of stands when facing the delivery. Apparently, back in the 1700s. 1700, sorry, a batsman had to place his bat into a hole cut in the turf to score a run. The wicketkeeper and fielders had to get the ball into the hole before the bat in order to effect a run out. This hole was called the popping hole, but after too many fielders had their fingers broken by the batsman slamming his bat into the hole at the same time as the fielder's hand, it was decided to change the hole to a line. The name popping hole then became popping crease.
Fascinating stuff.
That was my second answer.
I was pretty close.
Yeah.
That was a tricky one, but unbelievable. Would you not agree?
Absolutely.
Guys breaking their hands just for no reason. But
for cricket, mate. For cricket.
Nobody's got that, so Dave's still one up in the studio. We've got three more to go. Umpire. Umpire. This is specifically cricket umpire. So umpire.
I'm clueless on this one because umpires feature in a lot of sports, yeah, so yeah. I don't know where this one will have.
Well, cricket's originated. One of the oldest games. This I got all these terms from the History of Cricket article on blogsport.com, if you want to go and check it out. just sort of credit them. But yeah, so apparently this has derived from cricket, the term umpire. So anybody...
You stumped us, mate.
I've stumped you. Very good. So nobody's got it. So the word umpire evidently stems from the French nom pair, which means not equal or odd man.
Yeah.
So an umpire
obviously.
Is an odd man. Well, from our experience of umpires, that's probably not far
that's
off.
That's very
far
true.
Off,
really. Yeah.
This continued until the mid-1860s when they started using white paint. No, sorry, I was reading the crease term. This is to imply that the odd man is called in to make decisions between two contestants. So there you go. That was umpire. So still one up, Dave. Two to go. Slips. This is a fielding position
now,
next to the wicketkeeper.
I've got a theory on this one. Yeah. Where the ball slips off the edge of the bat and is taken by the slips.
That is absolutely correct,
oh,
Dave.
Oh. Nailed it again.
That's two from four, Dave. Very good.
I wrote a few of these.
So that's 2-0, Dave. Got one more really quickly. Third man. Third man's another fielding position.
I think this has come from... So if you have a keeper and then a slip and then behind them, you would put your third man.
That is absolutely correct, Craig.
I'll let you have that one, Craig, because we were talking about that one before.
Very good effort. So that... finished England 2, Australia 1, so unlucky there, Craig. But that was Timmy Teasers.
England got to win something in there.
Okay, now we will move on to our weekly gossip section where we're looking ahead to the next test match at Adelaide. Some interesting things have happened this week, no less than some of the developments about Ben Stokes. We talked about Ben Stokes a lot last week. For those that don't know, Ben Stokes has been travelling out to New Zealand, allegedly going to play for a club... over there called Canterbury. He has family out there. It's very suspicious that New Zealand is particularly close to Australia. A lot of speculation whether Ben Stokes is going to be travelling over after his two-game ban is fulfilled, so he can't play the Adelaide Test, but this could be a warm-up game. Do we think this is a... Because England have come out and said this is nothing to do with... Ben Stokes playing in the Ashes squad. They've denied any involvement he's going to have. Do you believe that, and do you think Ben Stokes is going to play a part in the rest of the series?
Well, I think obviously he's got intentions to play in the series. I saw an interview from Chris Wokes who said none of the players had heard anything about it. So I guess maybe it's just his way of showing he's ready to get out there, ready to play.
Any thoughts, Craig, as an Australian fan? Obviously, you probably don't want to see Stokes out there.
I wouldn't want to see him out there, to be honest, but... I think he's probably gone out there off his own back out to New Zealand. It obviously makes him so much closer, gets him in that time zone. So then if he does get that called up, he is ready. So I think he's fully aware of what he's doing and why he's done it.
I think England had full intentions to get Stokes in for later tests. I think this is a chance for him to warm up personally. But some developments have come through today that his assault case has gone through to the Crown Prosecution Service. A big setback in terms of whether he can play. Will that play a big part in him not playing, do you think, anybody?
I don't know if that... Will he have to fly back in regards to if anything is brought
up? It doesn't
up that?
Stay in the statement that I've got so here not. From Avon and Somerset Police. It's just been part today, and they're now seeking charging advice. So,
mm-hmm. Okay.
It's all still up in the air, really, isn't it? They've not really cleared anything. He's obviously been allowed to go out there, so...
Apparently, he went out there off his own back. It's nothing to do, allegedly, with the ECB sorting out this trip.
You must be in contact with them.
Yeah, there's no way he's not speaking to them. I think they would have told him to do that, and they can then take a back seat and say they've got nothing to do with it. But, I mean, you wouldn't just... He's sort of only just sort of come out and... He's had a lot of time playing and he doesn't really need to go out there and play. I think this is probably a better time for him to rest if he's not going to be playing in the Ashes, but he knows. I think he knows something we don't.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. And it would be huge, huge news if Ben Stokes comes in and
Absolutely.
Plays.
Absolutely. And it'd be a huge talking point as well. It's good to see sort of cricket at the top of the Sky Sports headlines and things. A bit
Absolutely.
Like the 05 Ashes again. People are talking about cricket.
I think you're dead right. I think you're dead right. I mean, some of the other things that have happened in the previous game, Moinelli apparently hurt his finger. He cut his finger, which is a big thing for a spinner to grip the ball. It's maybe why he didn't perform as well as he could do. Do you think there's any risk that Moinelli won't play?
I think the injury itself isn't actually that big. It is on his index finger, which is his turning finger, but I think they've got so many physios, there's so many ways of recovering, like getting back into it so quickly. I don't think it will affect this game.
It'd be interesting to ask you actually, Craig, about whether Australia will change their side, because Glenn Maxwell, who's a player that was touted to actually play in this series, played a Sheffield Shield game the other day against, I think it was South Australia. He was playing for Victoria.
Yeah.
And he scored 278 in an unbelievable knock. And anybody that scores 278 in the way that he did has got to be knocking on the door. If, as an Australian fan, are you of the attitude, if it's not broke, don't fix it? Or would you want to try and get Maxwell into that side somehow?
I do rate Maxwell, and I do like the way he plays. And I think he'd be a massive... Well, I think he'd be... bigger sort of advantage playing in the day-nighter because of the sort of style of his play. But at the same time, yeah, you don't want to change something that's just sort of won their first test, and you want to keep that team. And
who would he come in for? It will be the...
It was just a bit of gossip that he played well this week, but we'll come back to selection later. Some of the things, Johnny Bairstow, for those who haven't seen, Johnny Bairstow has been accused of headbutting one of the Australian players, Cameron Bancroft, at the start of the tour. This was very, very strange. Apparently, Bairstow met up with Cameron Bancroft in a bar and decided to greet him, not with a handshake, but with a headbutt. Which is something that he does with his rugby pals. Bancroft was very shocked by this and had quite a funny interview. If you want to watch the interview on BBC, it is quite funny. What did you make of that? I mean, is that just blown out of proportion?
I mean, the first time it got picked up, wasn't it, on the stump mic with the Australians ribbing Johnny Bairstow. So it obviously wasn't an issue before that, and I think it's just been blown a little bit out of proportion.
Yeah, it was like a month prior to them sort of any of the games and everything. So I think, the Aussies have sort of held that back and used it and maybe got into Bairstow's head a little bit with it.
Just quickly, that's quite a good tweet about it. So you know Strauss said it was something he does with his rugby mates. It's just there was a good tweet from our good friend KP24.
Oh, I've seen this. Yeah.
Strauss says okay to headbutt greeting. Can't wait to see him again. #Ashes.
Kevin Peters.
He just loves sticking it in, doesn't he?
He's just a maverick at the end of the day.
He has to stick his oar in, doesn't he?
He's got to be involved somehow.
He had some strong views at the end of the game on the BT coverage, and we'll talk about that later when we're sort of selecting sides and stuff. So, but Peterson's been very interesting with some of his views. Just finally, some of the things that players have said, it came out. We spoke last week about all the sledging and stuff that was happening before the game and whether Australia were using this as a tactic. They seem to do it every time. Nathan Lyon came out and said he was going to end careers. He did bowl very well, so he may well have done. But he said that he was going to end careers and Australia were going to end sort of Alistair Cook's career and this, that, the other. Apparently he used that as a way to deflect some of the media attention away from the new players like Bancroft and Tim Payne, who'd come back into the side. Have England been a bit naive and the media been a bit naive that we haven't recognised that and we haven't put a bit more pressure on
these new
guys?
I think some of them did recognise he was doing it as like a... If they're saying it's a bet, weren't they? Saying he was doing it as like a bet, he was just like fronting.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah, but...
He's been the most vocal part of the Australian side, isn't he? He seems to have taken on quite a senior role now, and I don't know whether he's sort of taking it a bit too far, because if he has a bad test match now, he's going to look silly. But
I think it's very much like the Aussie nature is to go at you hard, and it's a big Ashes, obviously two very, very similar teams, and I think it's just that's their attitude towards it. They're going to go at you hard, even with things like bounces and things. They're going to come at England. I think it's just their way of doing it and dealing with it.
Do you think the English press could be a bit more... Well, if you look at the English press, there's a lot of pressure on James Vince and a lot of pressure on Stoneman and Milan, some of these guys who did perform. They performed okay. You look at the Aussie media, they go very, very hard at the English players. We don't go so. We've not really paid any attention to the Australian team and not really gone in on them. You go out there and it's like a cauldron, even with the media. Should we change that culture?
I think you've got the Stokes thing, takes a lot of attention as well.
Yeah.
I think we're quite self-deprecating, aren't we? Not.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I'd say it hasn't been much about the Aussie players. I've seen even more like the Australian media went at the Aussie players, such as like Tim Payne, didn't they? There was a big uproar about his selection.
Yeah.
Not so much over here, as you said.
Well, I just think we could do more. And I mean, when I was watching one of the sort of video logs of some of the BT commentators like Michael Vaughan and stuff, and they looked through the paper after the first day's play when Vince had scored the runs, there was absolutely nothing of Vince and Stoemann's knock until like page 14 in the paper. All the back pages were surrounded by Australian news and Australian players. Yeah. Nothing about how well England had played that day. And I think that's we're missing a trick, really. But that's my opinion, and I don't know. That's the way it's, the culture is, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to look too much into the media side of things. I think the players should really be able to handle themselves on the pitch and detach themselves from the media comments. If it's affecting them, then do they need to be in the side, I think, if they're...
True. Okay, cool. That was the gossip. Okay, now we move on to the main... subject area of our podcast today. It's the review of the previous game in Brisbane. A very disappointing game for England, a loss of 10 wickets. Dave, I'll kick off with you. Where did it all go wrong for England in that game?
Well, it started so well, didn't it? We got off to a flyer. The debutants were scoring runs, but obviously the fourth day we just fell apart, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean one of the main turning points of the game was Steve Smith's 100, a brilliant 100, 140 not out. Craig, from an Australian standpoint, how happy were you with his performance, and how key was he in that victory?
Yeah, I think he basically has won that first test. He has turned the game around. I mean, England did have a great start, started really well, got runs on the board early, and then sort of lost it. They didn't carry on. They started with good intent, and then Steve Smith obviously just turned that round. I think it was a chanceless, apart from the nicked moment off Moen Ali, which I think dropped short anyway, which is, other than that, was a pretty much chanceless 100.
He didn't get all of a hook at one stage, and the man out on the boundary was wearing fielding pads, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I remember
Stoemann.
Swanee ribbed him out on the boundary.
Yeah. We are really clutching at straws to find.
He was class, wasn't he? It was faultless. He's patient. England threw everything out. They had the bounces they were throwing at him to drive his run scoring, which they did for a part, but he was just, as you say, he didn't make any mistakes, and he's just...
I think he almost showed us. Like, he almost went back into that old style of test match cricket of just leaving everything outside off stump and anything that's straight. He's so good off his pads, and he sort of made England bowl to him. He bowled what he wanted them to bowl.
So, looking at it from an England bowling performance, did England have poor plans to Steve Smith, or were we just lacking skill level?
I think they went out with a plan. Like, when he was in bat, I think they packed the leg side and then looked to bowl straight at him, and that didn't really work. So then they did change it, but then it's not like they had a plan B. They sort of just went back to bowling outside off stump and not really trying anything with him.
They tried to be patient with him, and he just won that battle. He was happy to stay there all day.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, if you were in the England camp now and you're having a team meeting ahead of the game in Adelaide, I know that the conditions there are going to be slightly different. Where do you bowl to Steve Smith?
It's hard. That's hard. I don't think you can't really bowl anywhere to Steve Smith. Things will be different in the day-nighter. Obviously, it's a completely different sort of... The ball will do a bit more. I think... They've got to just stay in that channel outside off stump. That's his weakest area. I think that's where you've got to keep the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they threw everything they had at him. Root tried everything he did good with the field. I don't really know what else they can do apart from try and keep him quiet, stop him taking the game away from us, and maybe just pick up wickets at the other end. But
I mean, do you have any of his stats over there, James? Steve Smith's stats.
What do you want to know?
Can you just reel off...
just how good he is.
Just reel off his test average.
His test average.
Some 60, of his averages.
60. Yeah, so I've got his test average, 61.
That's unbelievable.
2100s, 2150s. He's just... different class.
I've seen a stat recently that there are only two players that have finished their careers with a higher average than that. And obviously one of them's been Don Bradman, and the other one's Vogues, which is...
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a real issue for England, this, because if we're struggling to figure out a way of getting out, other than him making a mistake, there is a real issue on getting one guy out. And I think, although you say he's such a great player, I think there's a real problem with the England attack. I think it was evident in the last game that there was a real lack of pace in our attack compared to their team.
Yeah, do you want the paces? So you got Stark was averaging 88, Cummings 87, Hazelwood and Wokes both averaged 85.
Okay.
Ball was 84, Anson Broad towards 83, 82.
Okay.
So they've just got more pace, and it just seems to...
Well, having said that, the best bowlers for England were Anderson and Broad.
Oh, yeah.
And then you look at someone like Jake Ball, I think his economy rate was something like 5 and over in the second innings. It was close to 5, between 4 and 5 in the first innings.
Yeah, 4.27 in the first innings, and then he was at 4.75 in the second innings. But
was that a mistake to pick Jake Ball?
Who are you picking over him there? I think your choices there, you're only going to pick the same bowler, or a similar bowler, if you were to take him out. There's sort of no other option. I think they've
got Curran and Overton in the squad, haven't you?
Yeah, but they're both very
similar. Then Mark Wood is out in Australia bowling for the Lions, so whether he'll play a part later in the
Well, we can have a chat, and when we do our predictions, I guess we can make our own minds up about that. But I'm guessing Jake Ball's under pressure because he didn't go well, nor did Chris Wokes in particular. Chris Wokes didn't go well with the bat either. A big issue was Moeen Ali. From an Australian perspective, Craig, when you looked at the way that Moeen Ali bowled, I know that was an apparent injury to his finger that he may have cut it, and that affected the revs he put on the ball, but... Him and Lyon looked a class above Moeen Ali.
I mean, especially on that pitch, it was sort of established early that it wasn't a normal Gabba pitch, and there was a lot more in it for the spinners. Lyon made the most of that. I think he got his wickets. He got 4 in the first.
He was two in the first, and then he was 3 in the second. But bowled a lot of overs as well.
A lot of overs.
Held that one end up. Really.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very impressive. I think he was one of the standouts for Australia. Another guy we haven't mentioned who played very well at a tough time was Sean Marsh. I mean, we spoke last week about whether he should be playing, and we just mentioned Maxwell. But Sean Marsh had a very good game, and he was pivotal to batting with Steve Smith in that game.
Yeah,
and he took the game away from
him. Yeah, would you say that what they were at the time, it was for 4, wasn't it? Yeah, they were 76 for 4, and then it was a 99 partnership, which literally... It felt like England had the chance to hammer home a big advantage and just didn't do it. Didn't have the ideas or the plan. I don't know what you guys think, but...
Well, I mean, if you look at it by comparison, we've got Milan in there trying to do the job that Marsh was doing, and he just doesn't have the experience. Marsh knew exactly what Smith was doing at the other end and stayed with him.
I mean, England, I think the England missed a trick there. We could have been a bit more aggressive.
In the second innings, where Lyon got a couple of left-handers out, and they just were falling for it. They didn't attack him. Like you say, they weren't attacking him enough. Moeen Ali did it.
Yeah.
But still, you need to be attacking more.
I think the guys last week made a great point that we have so many left-handers in our top order that Lyon could bowl to those left-handers. And I think England were very, very soft with the way that we got out in both innings. I mean, looking back at some of the dismissals, Johnny Bairstow stands out for me in the second innings, who looked like he was playing well and he was caught third man. No doubt England are going to get the same treatment in the future test matches, especially somewhere like Perth. I mean, how do we go and cope with this kind of barrage? Because we know it's coming.
I think, but that's the thing, they know when they came over here, they know it was coming, so they've been training for it. I think... It's not a matter of not following the ball. Like, if it's bounced at you, like, it's not a matter of not following. I think it's more getting your own game plan right. Like, Smith knows his strengths, and that's what he did. He just played by his strengths. And I think England are maybe trying to work the game a little bit too much, make something happen when it's not there.
We say it every year, don't we? They prepare for the short ball, and they get a barrage of short balls. And I think it comes down to the decision-making rather than their ability to play the short ball. Johnny Bairstow... tried to pull in the first innings, tried to pull one off a length almost and hit it for 6.
Yeah.
And hit it straight up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's definitely in the back of their minds, isn't it, when they go out to bat. I mean, Alistair Cook was a big disappointment. You could say he got a good ball in the first innings, which was fair enough. In the second innings, another soft one against a short ball. And this is a guy who, you know, I'd said that he would be top run scorer. He may well still be, but, you know, to get out in the way that he did. And, you know, I know that Adelaide is different conditions, but there's certainly going to be more of a barrage from these guys. And England have got to come up with an answer. You either do one thing or the other. You either decide. I think Stoneman did pretty well against it. He decided to wear it instead of taking it on. And I think if we brush upon those guys that did actually play well, especially in that first inning, Stoneman played very well. He was very solid. He looks good. And to be fair, James Vince had a brilliant knock in that first innings. How good was James Vince?
Very good. But we go back to Nathan Lyon's impact on the game. Brilliant run out.
Yeah.
Changed the game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely superb run out, wasn't it? One-handed pickup through the stumps down. And yeah, that effectively changed the game. Craig, from your standpoint, how well did not only Smith play, but for Warner and Bancroft to knock those runs off in the second innings with such ease? You must be very pleased from a batting perspective there.
Yeah, definitely. They just stepped up and just did. They knew what was needed to be done, and they just done it. They've composure, no, nothing silly in what they did. I think again that was another faultless innings, both of them. Yeah. Didn't give a chance away. I mean, I think that's the difference between in the first test, England-Oz. England came out, batted really well their first innings, and then almost in their second innings didn't look like they had a plan, or just completely different batting. Like, it just didn't look like the same team.
So the debutants for England, well, not the debutants, but the guys we've mentioned for England there, Milan went.
He got in the first innings he got 50, didn't he? Did he get 50?
Yeah, he hit 50. He went well in the first innings.
And then he was lying as well, just.
But for those that don't know, didn't watch the game, the wicket was a very strange wicket for Brisbane. So the first day was quite green. It was quite slow. It suited the English conditions and the English players. It replicated English conditions, sorry. So that's probably why England did very well. And then the pitch sort of hardened up and became quicker and more difficult. And that's almost, we had such a good first day, and it's almost reminiscent of what happened last time when we were in Australia. We got them out for sort of under 300, it was around 200 mark, and we're all thinking it's all hunky-dory and it's going to go very well, and all of a sudden we've lost 5-0. And I think the next test match is going to be huge. If we lose the next test match, it could be a long series for England.
Yep.
Some of the players in there, we've got two wicketkeepers in the room, so how do you think Tim Payne went with the gloves? Obviously, there's a lot of speculation around him. Craig, I think you're probably better on this, being an Australian fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard as a, you know, to step into that sort of position and do well, and as a keeper it's quite hard to get noticed as being a good keeper. Normally a good keeper is sort of someone that you don't notice, and I think he did exactly what you'd needed to do. Everything was sort of perfect and spot on.
Yeah, he dropped one tough chance, didn't he? There was obviously the controversy with Ali's stumping, but other than that you didn't really notice him throughout the.
He had the good moment where no one went up for the appeal for Broad.
Yeah,
and he appealed and he got it reviewed. It just felt quite like a good thing for him, isn't it? Just to get him amongst the team. I quite like that moment. He was there was a big crowd around him when it happened. It was good for him. I thought he did well. Like you say, he didn't really notice him do anything.
Yeah, and Australia haven't really had a nailed-on wicketkeeper since Gilchrist, have they? So
Brad Haddin to an extent for a while.
True. Brad Haddin.
But after Brad Haddin, there was a big hole. But they usually have these guys set up in Australian culture. There's always guys that are ready to step in to the next slot. And I guess over the last sort of maybe 10 years since that old generation left, they haven't had guys necessarily coming straight into the side that they would. The Australian second 11 10 years ago, or maybe 15 years ago, was a very, very good side. And I don't think they necessarily have that now. But they still got good guys to come in. We mentioned a bit about Steve Smith earlier. We can talk about the England captain a little bit here, Joe Root.
Yeah.
The way that he played in the game, he got James. If you want,
yeah,
to
I've got so, yeah, just stats. Just his stat, just the thing where he gets dismissed between 50 and 90. A lot. So it's been dismissed 29 times between 51 and 90 in Test match cricket, and in 2017 alone, 4 times between 50 and 59. So you can say that's a difference from if Joe Root would have maybe gone and got a Steve Smith-like score, might be different, you don't know, but...
That's an interesting stat, because he went on that record, didn't he, where he hit 1250s in consecutive test matches or something along those lines. He beat A.B. de Villiers. What are your thoughts on that stat, Dave?
So, just to add to that, I saw a stat the other day that he has only converted... You might want to check this, but he's only converted one second innings 50 in his career.
Is that right?
Mm. So, I think his conversion rate is an issue. You look at Smith, as soon as he gets past 50, he looks set in for a day and a half at least, doesn't he?
I think so. The difference between the two of them is Root sort of... he'll have a period of play where he will be sort of untouchable and no, like Smith is at the moment. Smith might be a little bit more reliable, whereas Root will sort of go in and out of these phases of playing well.
I mean it's a really interesting stat, and we bring that stat up because Root got 50 in the last game and was dismissed the next ball after, I think he got 51, and then the very next ball he was out. He was out in the first innings to Stark.
He's at LB second innings. Again,
LB, but yeah, LB both times. I think Hazelwood, the second one, wasn't
it?
How much pressure is Joe Root under now? Now that Steve Smith's come out and got this big score, does that add extra pressure just purely on that fact because they're sort of head-to-head in this?
Absolutely. I think so.
Yeah, I think this Ashes is always going to be a battle of the captains. It was always going to be down to that, and obviously Smith stepped up for the first game. It's obviously going to put loads of pressure on Root. But he is also the sort of player that can step up, and he will step up in big games, and he has done before. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think we mentioned it last week, but they noticeably do go hard at Root, and he is going to have to face that challenge, and it will be very interesting. He's actually a guy that is strong on the short ball, as is Cook. I mean, these are two guys that didn't really score runs in the last game, not the wealth of runs that we expected. And it was actually the new guys that came in, Milan, Vince and Stoneman, that actually played very well. So that's an encouraging sign. If we do get Root and Cook to step up, then England could be in good shape. But what stats have you got there for Joe Root in general? Just because we know that Smith averages 61.
Yeah, give me 2 seconds. I was just looking at
something. If we can just compare.
I did see, I think it was on Sky Sports, that his LBW count, the amount of times he's been dismissed by LBWs, is on the rise. I think in his last 71, the 71 previous tests that he played, he was out 7 times LBW, and then in his last 30, I think he's been out 11.
Yeah, I saw Michael Vaughan talking about this, how he's leaning, he leans over, doesn't he, quite a lot, and gets quite LBW.
Yeah.
They're sent on BT.
Yeah.
I'll just keep saying, Joe, let me quickly get his average in Australia, which I know is not very good. 2 seconds.
Yeah, go. I mean, that's the problem that Joe Root has. You can look at a stat like that if you're in an Australian dressing room and actually make a plan, whereas Steve Smith, you're literally bowling for a mistake. And that's the difference between the two players, I think, at the moment. And that's the issue that England face. But I think Joe Root can still have a good series. I mean, do you have that stat up there?
Yeah, so he averages 28 in Australia, normally averages 53 for the rest of in the 61 matches he's played.
I mean, when he went out to Australia last time, he was a very young player. He was just coming to the side, and that was the infamous Mitchell Johnson series. He was bowling very, very fast. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's got to the stage with Joe Root where he gets a 50 and gets himself out, and we're disappointed. But actually, he does churn out 50s for us on a regular basis. But we need him. We need him to go big.
I think,
and he's not been doing it recently.
Go on, Craig.
I think the sign of a good player is someone that then does get to 50 and then cracks on for you. I think if you are getting to 50, especially if you're an international side or an international cricketer, you need to then progress on, especially if you're a batsman.
And especially given the players around him at the moment, we've had a lot of inexperience. If you have other guys in the team like a Peterson, like a Flintoff, like a Vaughan, you can get away with scoring 50. I think Ian Bell got away with scoring a lot of 50s because he was with quality players in the side, whereas Root, there's a bit more pressure on him to score those runs. But that was the review anyway, and we'll move on. So this is How's Out. This is where we discuss who should and shouldn't be in the sides for the next test match. For those that don't know, the next test match is in Adelaide. This is a day-night game. This is where they use... they obviously start later, they use a pink ball, and they use the floodlights later on in the evening, which affects a lot of things. It affects the conditions. You're out there in a colder environment. The ball does different things. The batsmen have a different light, a different thing to look at. Is this a positive thing for England that we're playing a day-night test match, Dave?
The media seem to think so, don't they? I've heard a lot of pundits saying that it plays into our hands with the lateral movement, but, you know, we've got guys bowling close to 90 miles per hour for Australia. If they're getting lateral movement, then
yeah, what are your thoughts, Craig, as an Australian point of view?
Yeah, like it does. The day-night game does suit the English bowlers a little bit more because they are used to moving the ball a little bit, and it comes into it at night. But I think again, that's all on the toss. I think if England lose the toss and Australia decide to bat first, or like that's not gonna, it's not gonna help. Those advantages won't come in. I don't think as much. They won't be as heavily advantaged.
Advantage.
Do you want some stats for the bowling averages between like in the first two sessions and the last session, if that's of any interest to you?
Sure.
So it's in the first two sessions, so the day sessions, it's at 34.41. In the evening sessions, so the where it's more lights are going to be on, it's down to 27 is your bowling average for fast bowlers.
This is for all day-night test matches around the world?
Yeah, around the world. Obviously it's different conditions in every day-night test match, but it's a constant theme there. It's good to bowl under the lights, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting the point you make there, Craig, about it being so dependent on the toss. I actually watched some cricket out there when South Africa, not only to go to the game, but the cricket was on when South Africa played a day-night test match there last winter against Australia. And Du Plessis was the captain, and sort of strange declarations were happening. When there was 10 overs left in the game, or it was starting to go dark, there were declarations on only 200 ahead to get guys in against the new ball under lights. It's literally one of those things that, you know, we could be very reliant on it going dark, and runs may come out of the equation if that situation arises. I mean, where do you stand on setting low declarations, playing in a certain way, playing more aggressive in the day to assure you don't face the lights? Do you think that will come into it?
It's a risky strategy for England, because they've just had a low total knocked off for no wicket. So, you know, the way those two openers came out and just set the pace against us, even if the ball is, it's going to be skidding onto the bat under the lights with the dew, that might suit David Warner. He might go out there and smash us all over the place. So,
what do you reckon on that, Craig? I mean, it's a difficult one because we haven't played out there under lights against Australia. How many games has there been?
I know Australia's record is 3-0, and then they've played two at the Adelaide Oval. They've won both. So
they've won all three out.
They've played three day nights at home, and they've won all three, and they've played two at the Adelaide Oval and won both of them.
Okay, so all the excitement of England being under lights, we're against a side that are 3-0. So I mean, Craig, do you think any of those tactics will come into it, or do you think England are clutching at straws a little bit?
I think it's hard to decide whether those tactics are going to sort of help or not, because they've been, like you said, there's been such a small amount of games played sort of day night, sort of a new feature, as to say, as of cricket. So I think, yeah, getting those tactics right is hard. No one really knows what works and what doesn't work. I think, again, like sort of same what David said, you don't want to declare on a low score after, you know, just losing your first test, putting out a low score. It is a hard one.
This game's so important.
Exactly. I was just about to say that.
It's not a dead rubber. The South African one was a dead rubber. They were South Africa already 2-0 up, so maybe there was like a bit of like, let's just experiment. Yeah. This is so big.
Yeah, I think this is a must-win for England, really. I think if they're gonna have any chance of beating Australia down under, they need to win this one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if it goes to 2-0 and then Perth next game, which I believe it is, then it's going to be a long series. I can't see us winning at Perth. 3-0. I mean, it could be another whitewash. That would be an absolute disaster. But it could be if we lose this game.
If you go the other way and we win this one, and then potentially Ben Stokes comes in for the third, we don't know.
Positivity.
Then potentially I'd like to see Mark Wood, if he plays a bit more cricket for the Lions out there.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden you've got Milan out for Stokes, ball out for
Wood. Different side.
Wood, and it's a completely different side.
It is a different side. I mean, We'll just touch upon the players that we think are going to play in the next game. So we'll run down the sort of teams. I think we can agree. We'll start with the England team. We can agree that Cook and Stoneman will open the batting.
Yeah. Yep.
James Vince went very well in the last game. He'll play. Joe Root will obviously play. I don't think much will change in the top seven. I think the talking points are the bowlers. So we're looking at if Moeen Ali is still injured. Do you play Moeen Ali? I guess you're going to play him as a batsman anyway, aren't you?
Yeah.
Regardless of whether he can bowl.
On that point, I'd like to see Bairstow come higher than him, come in at six, because I think it's not going to change the way Mo bats. He's just going to go out there and play his shots from ball one, whereas Bairstow's got the ability to build a big total, and he can still do that at six, whereas at seven, I think he's forced to play an aggressive style of play.
Talking from a keeping standpoint, Craig, do you agree with that? Because being out in the field for a day and a half consecutively and then going out to potentially bat in the top six, is that one position going to make a big difference, or are they right in giving him an extra rest?
I've never played a test match, but you know, straight turnarounds are hard work, but they do get their sort of time to rest, and that's what they are there to do. They are pro athletes. You know, they've got all that recovery. They know what they're expected to. You know, they are expected to do that. That's their job, in a way.
Well, I mean, as an Aussie fan, would you rather? I know it's not too much different, six and seven, but would you rather see Bairstow come in at six, or would you rather have Moeen Ali, another left-hander, in there?
Well, I mean, if Moeen Ali's injured and not bowling, I'd love to see him stay in the side, because I think realistically England could bring in another player if he's not going to bowl and he is injured. That is, Bairstow, I don't think it makes that much of a difference. Sort of going up one spot.
Okay,
I think I'd like to see him go up. I think it does make a difference. I think you want to give him the most time to bat with the better players. The tail was pretty bad last game. They were blown out quite quickly.
Yeah.
So you want to give him much chance to bat with a better.
But then you've also got to remember, then if he moves up one, then that tail is a little bit longer, isn't it?
True.
It just makes it.
But I think historically, Mo's batted really well with the tail, and he's comfortable batting with the tail, and he's guided them through in previous test matches. Whereas I don't think Johnny Bairstow's had the experience doing that. I think he's better off playing as a genuine batsman at six.
I mean, it's a small point, but it adds left right. So you got Milan at five left, and then Bairstow right, and then obviously then Ali and then Wokes. I mean, Wokes didn't go so well in the last game, but we're presuming that he's going to play. I mean, he actually bowled pretty economically, but he didn't really look threatening.
I think if he's getting some sideways movement in a day-nighter, he's one of our most skillful bowlers, isn't he? So
we are expecting the ball to do some more, and Wokes is a very skillful bowler. But you look at someone like Jake Ball, who isn't necessarily a swing bowler, more of a seam bowler. But do you think Jake Ball? I mean, he didn't play very well at all in the last game, really, if we're being honest. Would you change Jake Ball for a Mark Wood or for a different player or for even a Mason Crane if Moeen Ali's hurt?
I think Mark Wood's definitely off the table because he's hardly played at all in county cricket, and he's obviously playing a game at the moment in Brisbane. So I doubt he would play. It would be Overton, I'm assuming, would be the one. But
they're both very similar bowlers in that respect.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're taking one player out to put the same player in. So I expect, it goes with the Ali injury. If he is injured and can't bowl, then you do need another spinner in that side. I don't think Root can sort of stand up, and that's not his role. I don't think he's ready for that or right for that.
So let's presume that Moeen Ali is going to bowl and bowl to his full ability. Who would you pick if you're going to? Would you drop ball first of all? And if you are going to drop ball, who would you pick?
That's hard. I think they have just lost, so I think maybe they do need to change it. But then. I would only take out Ball, and I'd probably only ever put Overton in. So, again, that's like I said, it's putting the same player in. So,
it's also putting a lot of pressure on Broad, Wokes, and Anderson if we take Ball out.
Yeah.
I understand the need for him in the team just to take the pressure off them, but he didn't bowl well enough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at the amount of overs Ball bowled. And the amount of overs, may say James Anderson bowled. I think James Anderson and Broad bowled pretty well, and that was one of Australia's tactics to try and get these guys to bowl long overs so they're less effective. How many overs did these guys bowl?
Who's
in
you
those
want?
Games?
Anderson, 29 in the first innings. Broad 25 in the first innings. Wokes was 24. Second innings was 11, 10 and 11 balls, but Ball bowled 8 in the second innings and he bowled 18 in the first innings. So not
a, I mean, the issue is for Joe Root is, does he trust Ball as a captain? Is he reluctant to bring Ball on because he is very expensive against guys like Warner? They can take the game away from you very quickly, and I think Ball is susceptible to leaking runs. So in that regard, maybe he should be changed. He wasn't very threatening. However, you look back at a series like 05, like when we won, we got hammered in that first game at Lords. Australia absolutely smashed us. Mm-hmm. Similar type of thing to this last game, and we didn't change the team. We decided to stick with the same 11, and we went on and won the series. So as a captain, do you stick to your guns and stay loyal to your players, or do you change things up so early in the series? I mean, it's a tough decision.
I think they are going to stick with the same side.
Yeah.
That's what I think they are going to do. Obviously, Tim, you spoke about Kevin Peterson talking about whether Mason Crane should come in, but it's a big ask to chuck a young lad
in conditions that aren't conducive to ball spin.
Absolutely. Into his first test start. Yeah. 2-1-0 down in a test match in a Ashes series. I can't see that happening.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's a reason that starting 11 has been picked as the starting 11. So I think selectors, captains, they need to back their decisions and sort of almost not prove people wrong, but I think they do need to keep with what they've got.
Yeah, and I mean, from a batting perspective, can we expect more of the same from sort of the first day we saw at Brisbane? Because the conditions in Adelaide are supposed to be more suited. It's not just the bowling that is more suited to England conditions, it's the batting as well. It's slightly slower there. It's going to be more beneficial to the English players. Is this England's best chance to win a test match in terms of the conditions when going out to Australia?
Well, the media seem to think so, yeah. The media seem to think that this is the one that England are going to win and, like, almost granted. But we've sort of touched on that as well. Australia's records aren't too bad in sort of day-nighters and...
Yeah. England did win there when they won, was it, in 10, yeah?
Yeah.
They won there. Handily as well, I think. So
yeah, it was a decent
obviously it wasn't result. A day night, which is the thing that just throws up in the air. But
you couldn't get some stats over there, could you, Statman, on some sort of the win ratio for Australia at the Adelaide?
Yeah,
Adelaide
yeah. Of course
while
can,
we just touch on another topic.
Keep small talking.
I think this might be another daunting stat in Australia's favour.
I'm hoping there's a very good stat. Obviously, the last stat was Brisbane. They haven't lost in 30 years, so I'm hoping that.
Last time. Well, I did look at this earlier. It was their unbeaten in the last. Five. The last time they did lose was to England.
In that series. 2010 series.
And it's been five unbeaten.
Well,
four
it's not
wins,
bad.
Four wins and a draw.
It's not bad. We now just have a look at the Australian sort of lineup. There's not too much to talk about in terms of changes. They will probably go with the same side. We touched upon it earlier with Glenn Maxwell. He's probably the only guy that can really put his hand up and maybe be selected. Craig, you're probably the best person to talk about here. Do you think, I know we spoke about earlier, do you think Glenn Maxwell could come in for, could he come in for someone like Payne and then Bancroft take the gloves? Could the order be reshuffled?
Yeah, I mean, Hanscom's sort of the only person that's didn't really offer anything in the first test, but he has offered things in the past and he is a good player. I think I would like to see Maxwell in the day-nighter. That's solely out of the way he plays and the way he is, but
as an English fan, I would not like to see Glenn Maxwell. If he's scoring 270, if he gets going, he can take the game. He's the type of player who can take the game away from us.
Absolutely.
And I don't think Hanscom is. So if he is going to come in, I think he'll come in for Hanscom.
Yeah. I think I've got a horrible feeling he's going to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just feels like it's...
There is no way, I'm telling you now, there is no way they're going to drop Peter Hanscom. There is absolutely no chance. I think... If I was a selector, I know they won't, but I would just drop Marsh. I know Marsh scored runs in the last game, but Maxwell's
they've
a
dropped him enough. They've dropped him enough times, haven't they, Marsh? So they might as well.
Yeah.
None of them did anything wrong, but when you've got a guy that scores 278, you've got to have a serious thing going.
He
would keep Joe Root up at night, and that's another one. Warner, Smith, and Maxwell that can all just win a game in a session. I know Smith was patient, but Smith can take a game away from you. And England probably don't have enough guys like that in our side.
Well, we do, but one of them's just in New Zealand.
just landed in.
Canada.
And another one's doing the commentary for BT. But Anyway, we'll move on to the predictions and see who we think is gonna win the next Test match and the series. So here we predict the outcome of the next game, and we predict the top run scorers and the top wicket takers for the series and the series overall, because we have some new guests in the studio. Obviously, the previous guests had their say. First of all, James, we'll go on to the Adelaide Test.
Oh, sorry.
What is your prediction for the next game? Who will win, England or Australia? It's going to be pink ball, day, night. What's going to happen?
England will win. I'm back in England. It's more hope than...
You're jumping on the media bandwagon.
Of course,
England conditions.
Yeah,
you know,
there's going to be a bit of movement. There's going to be
swing around corners.
Jimmy's going to take all the wickets.
Yeah, oh, I'd like that as well.
15 wickets. So you're going England, Dave?
Yep.
Who are you going for?
I'm with him. I'm going as well.
You're going with James, England, Australian fan. Who are you going for?
Funny enough, Australia.
Go for Australia here. I'm going to be different. I think it's going to be a. I think there will be all the wickets taken, the lights. Yeah. I'm going to go England. I'm going to back England. I think this is the one that England will win. So
just the one.
Yeah, I predicted that we'd lose 2-1 in the series. I think there'll be two more draws and I think we'll lose at Perth. So that was my prediction for the series there, for it to be a 2-1. Have you changed your prediction in terms of the series?
No, I think I did 3-2 to Australia.
You went 3 to Australia.
Yeah.
Dave?
Well, I've bet on 2-2, so I'm sticking with that.
You're sticking with your bet 2-2. So England will retain the Ashes?
Yes.
With 2-2, of course.
When Ben Stokes comes back in for the third test.
There he is.
Yeah, I mean, without Ben Stokes, I think it's definitely going to be 4-0 Australia.
So if Ben Stokes comes back in, Craig, what is your prediction then?
But he's only coming back in for the last test, I think, so 4-1.
Oh.
Unfortunately.
They won't bring him back in for a dead run.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely not.
Anyway, so there's the predictions there. So we have our... say on the top run scorer and the top wicket taker for each team. I went with Cook for England. I went for Smith for Australia for the run scorers. I then went for Hazelwood, and I then went for Moeen Ali.
Yeah, I remember you going for Ali.
for the wicket takers. James, do you remember what you went for?
I don't remember who I went for. I remember I bet on. I've got my bets here. So I did Smith and Stoneman, which doesn't look too bad.
That looks good.
And then Hazelwood and Anderson.
Okay. Dave, your predictions for the run scorers and wicket takers?
Again, I'm going from a bet slip. I've got Smith and Root at the moment, but I do like the look of Vince. I think he could be up there for the England run scorers. Wicket takers, I've bet on Stark, but again, I'm thinking Lyon's going to take a handful.
Okay.
English wicket takers can't look much past Jimmy. And English run scorer. Oh, just said, didn't I?
Yes.
Root and Vince.
Yep. Okay, Craig?
Yeah, so English run scorer. Vince looked quite good in the first test. So, yeah, I think he could score some runs. I mean, Smith, you can't really look past Smith. I think he's always going to be up there with the top run scorers. Wicket takers, I mean, going from the first test, you would say Lyon, but I don't think the conditions are really going to suit him. So probably Stark. Stark would still be.
Yeah.
For England, yeah, again, Anderson, you can't really knock him. He's always going to take wickets.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was our predictions. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. Thank you, James, for coming in. Thank you to Will in the studio, and thank you to our special guests, Dave and Craig. It's been a pleasure having you on.
My pleasure being here.
Thanks for listening, and please join us next week ahead of the next game at the Wacker, and we'll review what happened at Adelaide. Hopefully it'll be an England win, but join us next week.